Good evening, folks. This is Thursday, January 18, 2018, and it's 9 p.m. Eastern, and this is the COS call. You got it, John.
Okay, good evening, everybody. I hope you're all feeling warm and fuzzy because it's been cold as crap in the Chicagoland area. Today, we're going to zoom right into the Bill of Rights. And for those of you following along in our course material, that is Chapter 8. And so the Bill of Rights is also referred to as the First 10 Amendments, as John has often mentioned, and I do like, the Bill of Prohibitions, meant to chain the central government, our employee, to the rules. And after the Constitution was written, they wanted to fine-tune it a little bit, politics being what they are. And so they added the first 10 amendments. And so that's what we will discuss right now. So the preamble to the Bill of Rights reads, Congress of the United States, begun and held at the city of New York on Wednesday, the 4th of March, 1789, the conventions of a number of the states, having at that time of their adopting the Constitution, expressed the desire, in order to prevent misconstruction or abuse of its powers, that further declaratory and restrictive clauses should be added. And, as extending the ground of public confidence in the government, something we sorely lack around here, will best ensure the beneficent ends of its institution. Resolved by the Senate and House of Representatives of the United States of America and Congress assembled, two-thirds of both houses concurring that the following articles be proposed to the legislatures of the several states as amendments to the Constitution of the United States, all or any of which articles, when ratified by three-fourths of the said legislatures, to be valid to all intents and purposes as part of the said Constitution. These articles, in addition to and amendments of the Constitution of the United States of America, proposed by Congress and ratified by the legislatures of the several states pursuant to the fifth article of the original Constitution. And we have a little clip here that says, we the people have unalienable rights, natural and gifted to us from the governor of the universe, not from governments of men. Governments are created to secure those rights. No man has the authority to take away those rights. Placement of, by government of something, such as a license or permit, between the people and a right, constitutes an infringement on that right. And some case law, the doctrine of sovereign immunity is one of the common law immunities and defenses that are available to the sovereign, from Yick Woe versus Hopkins, also found in Perry versus Ohio. In the third volume of his commentaries, page 23, Blackstone states two cases in which a remedy is afforded by mere operation of law. In all other cases, he says, it is a general and indisputable rule that where there is a legal right, there is also a legal remedy by suit or action at law, whenever that right is invaded. And afterwards, on page 109 of the same volume, he says, I am next to consider such injuries as are cognizable by the courts of common law. And herein, I shall for the present only remark that all possible injuries whatsoever that did not fall within the exclusive cognizance of either the ecclesiastical, military, or maritime tribunals are, for that very reason, within the cognizance of the common law courts of justice. For it is a settled and invariable principle in the laws of England that every right, when withheld, must have a remedy, and every injury its proper redress. And that is found in Marbury versus Madison. So if you're looking for that place where it says for every injury there must be a remedy, there it is. But I find the wording very interesting here when he talks about slipping through anything that slips through the cracks ends up in common law. But he mentions ecclesiastical, military, or maritime tribunals. And for those of you that have reached out to me for assistance last year, towards the latter part of the year, as my education continued and I learned more, I required anyone that requested assistance from me to read a document that I had about black magic, because the courts are black magic. The court words are spells. And he mentions right in here, ecclesiastical. Well, that's exactly what he's talking about. Because in the pecking order, if you want to get at it from the dark side's perspective, who set this whole scam up, at the base, you have the chancery courts, then you have the statutory courts, and then you have the ecclesiastical courts. The ecclesiastical courts go right back to the Vatican and the three papal bulls, and it's right out of the Bible. And in all of that is this black magic. And so I required everyone to read this document, which is posted on our NLA Illinois file section. It's there for anybody to read. I wanted to point out what's going on at the top of the game, and it's the ecclesiastical courts. And there are phrases that you hear in court that you may think are legal phrases, they're legal ease. Well, yes, that's true. But if you go back a little further, if you dig a little deeper, you find that it is, in fact, spells, black magic. That's why the judges wear black robes. They're black magicians. And that's what Blackstone is talking about here with the ecclesiastical courts. I will give you one phrase that I picked up from Rod Class that you may want to put somewhere in your repertoire. You will hear John DeRash speak of never making any requests to a court. Never asking for anything. We come in as the king, and we direct, we order. And in the in that thought of directing, of ordering, if you want the court to recognize that you're not a fool, that you do know what you're doing, this is one of the phrases that I use at all times. If I am, for example, writing a motion, and bar attorney legalese is, oh, we pray upon the court in the good graces of the judge that may he please honor our motion. Something to the effect. I don't remember the exact legalese. It repulses me, so I don't remember correctly repulses me. But my wording is, it is my wish and your requirement that you grant this motion. Or you, I wouldn't even use the word grant. I would say file consent to this motion. But that's the phrase. It is my wish and your requirement. That is a black magic phrase. That is a spell. There are other great spells that are used in open court by knowledgeable people. And the one that I love, when you're good enough to open up your mouth in court, which 99% of us are not, and you really are going toe-to-toe with the black robe, a phrase that can often be used at the right times is, are you abandoning the bench? This is an incredibly powerful phrase, and it is black magic. It is a spell. And so I just briefly wanted to go over that to give you, allow you to understand that this is how it goes. And ecclesiastical courts are at the top of the game. And the judges know that if you have actually gotten to that point, you've gotten past the chancery crap, you've gotten past the statutory crap, and you've now got the judge into his ecclesiastical. And I will tell you the process, if you do that, is the judge will leave. If you've nailed him on the chancery court crap, he will call for a five-minute recess, and he will leave. And when he comes back, you're in another jurisdiction. Remember, I mentioned Broadcast, and he's seen 120 different frickin' jurisdictions. I pointed out five different jurisdictions in the Constitution in one of our past calls. So the judge comes back, and now you are in a statutory court. And when you hit him up on that, and he disappears for a five-minute recess and comes back, you're now in an ecclesiastical court. So I point this out to you because of the black magic involved. This is not hoodoo. This is not some kind of crazy, you know, kind of conjuring up that I did in my brain. This is the real deal. This is very, very serious stuff. And Blackstone mentions it right there when he says ecclesiastical court. So I wanted you guys to understand what it was that he was referring to when he said that, because you will, the guys and gals that are on top of their game, they know what to do in that regard, and that is one way to win your case, basically. All right, so I digress on that too much. So now we're going to move right into Amendment 1. And this is a biggie because it's actually got a whole lot of shaking going on here in a couple of phrases. And Amendment 1 reads, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. I'm going to talk about that in a little bit. Or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press. So that's 2 and 3. Or the right of the people peaceably to assemble, that's 4, and to petition the government for redress of grievances. That is a whole slew full of incredibly important stuff right there. But I want to talk about religion for a second. I have mentioned this before, and I don't care who this may offend or disagree with, but from the very beginning of this country, there never was a division of church and state. That is a dark side, cabal, psyop, bold-faced lie. And I can prove that to you. The guy that proves it the best is Ben Franklin. And if you have taken our civics course, and I can never remember what module it is, but it's in the beginning. It's within the first 5 or 7 modules, we quote writings of Ben Franklin. And in that writing, where we have talked about our founding fathers said that we had to have a belief in a higher power, a source, a God, a creator. It's in this passage. And he also said that if the citizens of this republic do not have a moral compass, a moral code, a morality, then this republic would never survive. So it's in that section. So you've heard that before. But Franklin goes on to write about avoiding the problems that Europe had had and every political corruption, every war, every economic problem emanated from religion in Europe at that time. Well, of course, we know historically that problem goes way back. But Franklin is writing about this. And so he brings that up, and so he felt so concerned about abominations, specifically the word occult can be used here. He was concerned that some wacky off-the-wall group would try to use and abuse the Constitution under this freedom of religion thing, and of course we see that happen every day in the newspapers. So he actually wrote his opinion on what constituted a, quote, legitimate religion. And he quoted the ones that were going at the time, I mean, the Methodists, the Presbyterians, the Catholics, the Muslims, the Jews, you know, the biggies, the big guys. But he also threw in a couple of concerns on what he would consider to be fringes or occults. And then he got into something incredibly interesting. And he said, the biggest problem that we're having now that we have the revolution is over and we have an operational republic, we have so few public buildings at this early stage, and we have so many religions on Sunday that wish to use them. And so, you know, you would have the Jews at 7 o'clock and the Catholics at 8, in a federal building, mind you. The Jews at 7 and the Catholics at 8, the Methodists at 9 and the Presbyterians at 10 and so on and so forth. And the biggest problem that they had at the beginning of our republic, they didn't have enough places, public buildings, with which to hold Sunday services. And so I wanted to point that out and make that absolutely clear. This is not and never was a Christian country. That's a line of hooey. That has never been true. And like I said, Franklin wrote it up. Go read what he wrote. And there was never a division of church and state. All religions are treated equally and with respect, and they always had access to the federal buildings. You know, like I said, the only problem was occupancy and demand, time demand. Everybody wanted it on Sunday. Well, you know, you can't accommodate. Everybody's got one damn building. So anyway, I want to be absolutely crystal clear on that. There was never a division of church and state, and this is not a Christian country. That was never the intent of our forefathers. So now you can understand a little bit more how I view when it says Congress shall make no law respecting establishment of religion, which I got into with Franklin and his worrying about the occult, and prohibiting the free exercise thereof, which was, as I pointed out, using public buildings. Now, this is history. You can be mad at me. You can tell me to take a flying leap. You can tell me I'm full of crap, but you can't support that because that is in writing by our founding fathers. I want to make that absolutely crystal clear. Abridging the freedom of speech. These days we got a serious problem with the Cabal Corporation. I mean, they're actually, you know, okay, we're going to allow you to protest, but we're going to have a free speech zone, which basically means a cyclone fence cage with which you can exercise your right to free speech during this protest and nowhere else. Well, that's just complete unconstitutional crap. I mean, that's horrific. Or freedom of the press. I'm not even going to get into that. We already know about the mainstream media and fake news. I think everybody gets that. So we don't need to explain that. Peacefully to assemble. That's a big problem. I don't give a crap about politics. I don't give a crap about parties, political parties, but I can state under current circumstances that the liberal left Democrats were making it very, very hard to peacefully assemble. And we saw that after Trump was elected with these anti-Trump protests, anti-inauguration protests, attacks on Trump supporters. That's a direct violation of the Constitution's right to peaceably assemble. And then, of course, the number five was to petition the government for redress. And, of course, as we all know, the corporation has just ignored us right and left on that one. But that's an incredibly powerful amendment right there, Amendment 1. And you should know inside and out that that is there, and that's what it covers. Now we pop into Amendment 2, which is a little more familiar to a lot of people, the Second Amendment, a well-regulated militia, comma, being necessary to the security of a free state, comma, the right of the people to keep and bear arms, comma, shall not be infringed. Now, there's a reason why I emphasize the commas, because that clearly defines what is being said here. Justice Scalia said it says what it says, and it doesn't say what it doesn't say, and those commas are breaks. They are separate thoughts. They are not tied together. So the first one says, well-regulated militia. Period. End of story. And Brett Winters has done a bang-up job going over that over the last year and a half, so I'm not going to beat that to death. Next section, being necessary to the security of a free state. Okay, and that's pointing out that the states are sovereign, that they are their own sovereign entities. And the third section says, the right of the people to keep and bear arms. I don't know how much more plain that can be. It says right there, the right of the people to keep and bear arms. It makes no qualification. It makes no, there's no footnotes. There's no asterisk. It's quite clear. The right of the people to keep and bear arms. Period. End of story. Comma. And then it says, shall not be infringed. Now, that's pretty damn clear. It says it shall not be infringed. You cannot ignore it. You cannot abrogate it. You can't change it. You can't interpret it. You can't twist it. You can't political theory it. You can't legalese it. It simply says shall not be infringed. Period. That's it. So there is no argument, no legal or lawful argument to abrogate the Second Amendment. And they wrote it that way. That's specifically why it is written that way. So I just wanted to mention that. There is a footnote here on that I do like, and it's under grounds for arrest. The carrying of arms in a quiet, peaceable, and orderly manner, concealed on or about the person, is not a breach of the peace, nor does such an act of itself lead to a breach of the peace. And that's from Wharton's Criminal and Civil Procedure and also in Judy versus Lashley. So that is made quite clear. You cannot be arrested simply because you have a gun concealed on your person. Period. We know how that flies in today's society, but I just wanted to point that out. So, all right, and they also mentioned the right of self-defense, so we'll talk about that a little bit because people can get a little hot-headed, they can get a little emotional, and they can step over the line very easily. And so the wording in this particular case law is very good, and I do want to spend a moment on it, but not much. When a person, being without fault, in a place where he has a right to be, is violently assaulted, he may, without retreating, repel by force, and, if in the reasonable exercise of his right of self-defense, his assailant is killed, he is justified. And that's out of a case, two cases, Runyon versus State and Miller versus State of Indiana. Runyon versus State of Indiana and Miller versus State of Indiana. Let's go back over this because this is really important wording. You are being without fault. That means you didn't throw a bottle at somebody. You didn't swear at somebody's girlfriend. You didn't key somebody's car. You didn't let the air out of somebody's tire. You didn't throw a snowball at their windshield. You are being without fault.
I am going to have to call.
In a place where he has a right to be. So you're in a place where you belong.
Because
you are not
no
somewhere
box.
That you don't belong. You're not in some biker bar at 4 o'clock in the morning.
That says the matter has been resolved.
You're not in the middle of a skinhead parade. You're not wearing a Ku Klux Klan outfit at a Black Rights rally. Where you have a right to be, and then you have to be violently assaulted. And I don't know how we, I'm not going to give you a definition of what that means, legally or lawfully, but I think I get the idea. I am violently assaulted. You come after me with a beer bottle or a tire iron or
it
a baseball bat or a knife, anything in that regard, I personally would interpret that as violent assault. So it says he may, without retreating, repel by force, and it doesn't define what force is at all. Remember, in law, it either says what it is or it doesn't say it at all. And what it says here is repel by force. There is no definition of force. And in my world, and as I have taught my nephews, if you're backed into a corner, you can't talk your way out of a fight. You can't back your way out of a fight. You have tried everything that you can do to stay out of a fight, and you are boxed in. There are no rules. Take that dude out with anything and everything available, a hammer, a bat, a golf club. I don't care what it is. If you have tried everything that you can do to avoid that fight, you do not have to play any games. And that's why I bring up the point, repel by force, because there's no definition of it. And so that's something that I really wanted to point out. Yes, we have a right to defend ourselves. That is correct. That's an unalienable right. And I can also defend you. If you're being assaulted and in danger of injury or death, I can intervene to protect you. That is quite fine as well. But think about what you're doing and how you're doing it and the way you're doing it when you find yourself in that situation. Okay, so now I'll move on to Amendment 3. And Amendment 3 says, no soldier shall, in time of peace, be quartered in any house without the consent of the owner, nor in time of war, but in a manner to be prescribed by law. Now, I know Nikki's got some thoughts on that subject. The second half of that statement can be very tricky with the corporation. The first part is pretty simple, okay? Government just can't come in and take your house and fill it full of soldiers just because they say so. They need the consent of the owner in time of peace. However, it says, in time of war, but in a manner to be prescribed by law. And we know the corporation thinks we're at war, and we're in martial law since 1871, and so they think that they can take your house in a manner to be prescribed by law. I know Nikki has several separate thoughts, but I always focus on the theft of mortgage foreclosures when I read that particular amendment. So
shall
I'm not
I hold
get
my
too...
peace?
No, actually, you know, I do want to set you loose on this. Go ahead. This is
okay.
Time to set you loose on this. Go ahead. Nikki's got some good stuff on this.
I just want to bring to the people's attention that quartering troops is more than just having them in your house. The fact is that when silver was taken out of the coin in 1965, and then it was after that in order to appease the people who were rioting about Vietnam, they went ahead and of course, the draft. What they did was they allowed for an all-volunteer military. Now, when it went all-volunteer, it went all-volunteer under the Social Security number and is now paid for, or the troops, okay, so-called troops, in other words, the mercenaries, are paid in a currency that is foreign to that which they swear their oath of office. Now, if that's not a slap in the face to people who believe these amendments apply to them, I don't know what is. But, okay, John, I'm finished.
Yeah, and so Nikki makes an interesting point. The bottom line here is with the corporation, what we have is foreign agents taking over our houses, which is my point. I mean,
they
we can digress and explain that a little bit more, especially when we get into all the other stuff. But that's a general idea that I wanted Nikki to bring out, and I wanted to leave with you. So
yes,
that's,
we're essentially quartering troops, okay? We're quartering troops, soldiers. We're quartering them by paying for their upkeep and their care with a currency that is foreign to which we are bonded by, you know, the various ways that they bond us through the Social Security Administration and so on and so forth, taxes, and, you know, with coin that is foreign to what it is that they swear their oath of office. And with that, I yield.
Thank you, Nikki. And so that kind of dovetails into Amendment 4, which is why I wanted to do that. In Amendment 4 reads, the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated. And they use the word shall. And we just alluded to the fact that we have foreign troops, foreign agents in the employ of our military under the corporation that can easily do, and they do, violate these rights. I mean, we've got, I wish I had a statute, I have it somewhere, But you see all these SWAT teams, these special operations guys, and they're using them against these poor homeowners in evictions on mortgage foreclosures, and they're coming in full military regalia. Well, guess what? There's a statute, I have it somewhere, that says you can't do that. It says you cannot dress like, buy a costume similar to, look like, mimic a U.S. military personnel. It says that right in the statute. And yet these guys do exactly that. And so that dovetails into violating our rights to be secure in our persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated. And that's what these goofballs are doing. And so the second half, and I could get into that really heavily, so I got to stop. But the second half says, no warrants shall issue but upon probable cause supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. And, of course, we never, ever get that. You never, ever have a sworn oath or affirmation in any kind of warrant. It just doesn't happen for the most part. And, of course, that is a denial of due process, and that is a reason to move your lower case, lower court case to an upper court. And so I do wish to remind you of that. Now, we have a footnote here issued by the NLA, and it talks about the individual rights versus corporate duty. And it's kind of interesting, so I want to go through this. We are of the opinion, and this is from a case called Hale versus Henkel. We are of the opinion that there is a clear distinction in this particular between an individual and a corporation, and that the latter has no right to refuse to submit its books or papers for an examination at the suit of the state. The individual may stand upon his constitutional rights as a citizen. He's entitled to carry on his private business in his own way. His power to contract is unlimited. He owes no duty to the state or to his neighbors to divulge his business or to open his doors to an investigation so far as it may tend to incriminate him. He owes no such duty to the state since he receives nothing therefrom beyond the protection of his life and property. His rights are such as existed by the law of the land long antecedent to the organization of the state and can only be taken from him by due process of law and in accordance with the Constitution. Among his rights are the refusal to incriminate himself and the immunity of himself and his property from arrest and seizure except under a warrant of the law. He owes nothing to the public so long as he does not trespass upon their rights. Okay, and then they wrap it up. Upon the other hand, the corporation is a creature of the state. And I want to go back to the beginning here where it says there's a clear distinction in this particular between an individual and a corporation, and that the latter, the corporation, has no right to refuse to submit its books and papers for an examination of the suit at the state. Well, see, this is what this whole SESTA-K trust, this alleged organization, whatever it is, because nobody's ever really proven what it is, based on your all caps birth name on your birth certificate. We know, for the sake of this discussion, it's a corporate fiction. And it says right there, the corporate fiction must surrender to the corporate authority. So the trick has been, if you understand the game in a deep-seated way and you understand what authentication is, that you simply, a corporation has an agent, okay? If you're dealing with IBM in Illinois, somewhere in here in Illinois, they have hired an agent to represent IBM for whatever reason. It might be to buy trucks. It might be to defend a lawsuit. It might be to send flowers to the dead. Toys, it's an agent. And the presumption here is that this certificate trust, this birth certificate bond, this straw man, whatever the hell you want to refer to it as, exists, and that you and I are the agent. And that's the key. When you learn this stuff in great detail, you simply rescind the presumption, you know, you rebut, rebuke, revoke, and rescind the presumption that you are the agent. And quite frankly, if you understand all of that, you're very well versed in that, it stops you dead in the tracks, because the corporation is a fiction. It doesn't exist. It's a piece of paper. And so how are they going to write a traffic ticket? How are they going to sue you? How are they going to send you a water bill? How are they going to fine you? How are they going to tax you? They can't. If there is no agent for that fiction, no flesh and blood representative to that corporate fiction, then they can't serve it. And that's my point. Now, that's a little tricky, and it takes a little knowledge, but I just wanted to bring that to your attention because it's in a footnote here that we put in. And so I'm going to move on. So Amendment 5, no person shall be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime unless on a presentment or indictment of a grand jury, except in cases arising in the land or naval forces or in militia when in actual service in time of war or public danger. Nor shall any person be subject for the same offense to be twice put in jeopardy of life and limb. Nor shall be compelled in any criminal case to be a witness against himself, nor be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. Nor shall private property be taken for public use without just compensation. Well, there's a whole lot of stuff going on in that amendment, so let's back up a little bit. So I think everybody on this call, unless you're brand new, understands what it means when we say unless upon a presentment or indictment of a grand jury. And that just doesn't happen. We do not get a presentment from a common law grand jury. We do not get an indictment from a grand jury. The prosecutor simply talks to the judge, and the judge approves a warrant and gives it to the sheriff, and the sheriff comes and gets us. That's what goes on today. They ignore this entire process entirely, and it's totally unconstitutional. And so the double jeopardy clause, no person shall be subject for the same offense to be twice put in jeopardy of life or limb. We get that. That's self-explanatory. We don't have to dwell on that. You can't be a witness against yourself. Again, pretty simple, straightforward. But that last one, deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, that's why we keep telling all of you guys, when you got a lower court case, you're going to get stomped like a grape, and all you're going to do is end up being made into wine. You've got to remove your case to federal court, and there isn't a case ever written since 1871 that doesn't deny you due process. And as John DeRash has explained on many occasions, and I have done so as well, you only need one violation of due process to make your case. And people think this is really tough. Oh, my God, you know, I got to remove my case to federal court. Well, in all claims, you don't make in lawsuits, you make claims. So in that first paragraph, which is something that the dark side is supposed to do in court and they never do, is there should be a jurisdictional statement stating right up front that they have jurisdiction. And that's the first thing you do in your claim, and you say, we have an NLA member that's in a bit of a problem right now for repelling foreign invaders when a couple of cops tried to get in and grab him, allegedly under a warrant, which they did not have on their person at the time. That is a violation of due process. That is all that's needed. So in that jurisdictional statement, in the very first paragraph, you would say something to the effect that this court has jurisdiction in this matter. It has to do with an attempt at an arrest without presenting a warrant, and you were denied a due process of law. And that's it. you can go on and describe what happened. You know, the cops arrived, and I talked to them, and they talked to me, and I asked for a warrant, and they said they had one, but not with them. But, you know, you can go into all that crap. That very first paragraph is a jurisdictional statement. And it tells the federal court that they do have jurisdiction because they didn't have a warrant, and that's violation of due process. And it's just that simple. That's the point I wanted to make. I don't want to get into that too much more than that.
John?
Yeah.
If I may, I'd like to add something that I had not noticed before about the Fifth Amendment. Nowhere in there does it mention people. It mentions persons.
Yes.
That's something.
Well, that gets back to agency. That's why I brought up the concept of agency.
Thank you.
You are correct. When they're talking about a person, they're talking about a corporation.
Right,
a corporation needs an agent.
Yes, it could be construed by them to be. Yes.
Now, okay. All righty. Yep. So we're dovetailing very nicely here. We're on a roll. Everybody, we're on a roll here. This is very, very good stuff. All right, so now we're going to jump into Amendment 6. And it says, in all criminal prosecutions, the accused shall enjoy the right to a speedy and public trial by an impartial jury of the state and district wherein the crime shall have been committed, which district shall have been previously ascertained by law, and to be informed of the nature and cause of the accusation, to be confronted with the witnesses against him, to have compulsory process for obtaining witnesses in his favor, and to have the assistance of counsel for his defense. And I'm just steaming when I read this, because I know what goes on in the 5-county area of Chicago, and none of it applies. We don't get a right, we don't get a speedy trial. Well, we do get a public trial. You certainly don't get an impartial jury, because the judge eliminates everything possible that you could use for your defense. And this happened to an NLA member. We stacked that trial. We had 10 people there that knew what they were talking about. They were appalled. Some of us walked away from that permanently disfigured mentally from what we saw that day. So none of that happens. Be confronted with the witnesses against him? Yeah, well, that's fine and dandy. However, the flip side, process for obtaining witnesses in his favor? No, the judge bars all of that. I mean, it's just insane. It's absolutely insane what goes on here in the metro area of Chicago. It's just incredibly evil. So, looking at the time, we got through 6 amendments. I'm going to stop there for tonight, and I yield, and I am going to open up the floor. So thank you all, and I yield.
Is there anybody on the call?
I don't know. I can't see the board. Don't everybody rush at once.
Yeah, star 6 to unmute.
We got lots of people.
Okay.
Are you now reaching through my phone and tweaking everybody on the nose? Do you feel me tweaking? Hello?
Can you hear me?
Yes, sir, I can.
Okay. All right, so I wanted to, I'm sure you figured you were going to have one response to this, the not a Christian country thing. I'm trying to find, now I used to be of that opinion. To some degree, I believed it was just based on Christian principle, our government. Now you can go back to Mosaic Law, and you find out about, what was it, his father-in-law, Moses' father-in-law, and the foundation of our government is very similar to Moses' government, Mosaic Law, and the structure of their government. And then, so I wanted to find out for myself. And so I started studying Franklin, Benjamin Franklin, Tom Jefferson, and George Washington. And I made a note every time I found them from either their correspondence, anything they'd written or anything they'd said, and I would just put in the margin that I'd put something like God again. Anyway, I started to run out of ink the number of times these guys talked about God, a Christian God. So I started to change my opinion. Not only were we based upon Christian principle, but that we are absolutely a Christian nation. And so I disagree with you there, and I think I can prove it. And I'm trying to find one of Brent Winters' footnotes in Excellence of the Common Law, but he discusses the demographics of our country right around the Revolutionary War, a little bit before then. And you can see the makeup of the people, and it's 99% plus Christian. It's just Christian. And there's some Catholics, and it's like a less than 1% Jewish. But here, I wanted to talk about Franklin. I wanted to bring up this one quote from Franklin. It was at the Constitutional Convention. And Franklin writes, or he says, he stands up and makes a plea. He says, "In the beginning of the contest with Britain, when we were sensible of danger, we had daily prayers in this room for divine protection. Our prayers, sir, were heard, and they were graciously answered. All of us who were engaged in the struggle must have observed frequent instances of a superintending providence in our favor. To that kind of providence, we owe this happy opportunity of consulting in peace on the means of establishing our future national felicity. And have we now forgotten that powerful friend, or do we imagine that we no longer need his, with a capital H, assistance? I have lived, sir, a long time, and the longer I live, the more convincing proofs I see of this truth that God governs in the affairs of man. And if a sparrow cannot fall to the ground without his notice, is it probable that an empire can rise without his aid? We have been assured, sir, in the sacred writings that except the Lord build a house, they labor in vain and build it. I firmly believe that without his concurring aid, we shall succeed in this political building. No better than the builders of Babel, we shall be divided by our little partial local interests. Our projects will be confounded.
Eric, you're breaking up. Can you?
I'm sorry, I'm breaking up.
Yeah.
I don't know. I haven't really moved.
Well, you sound good now.
Okay. So, we shall succeed in this political building no better than the builders of Babel. We shall be divided by our little partial local interests. Our projects will be confounded, and we ourselves shall become a reproach and a byword down to future ages. And what is worse, mankind may hereafter, from this unfortunate instance, despair of establishing government by human wisdom and leave it to chance, war, or conquest. I therefore beg leave to move that hereafter prayers imploring the assistance of heaven and its blessing on our deliberations be held in this assembly every morning before we proceed to business, and that one or more of the clergy of this city be requested to officiate in that service," end quote. Sorry if I broke up. So anyway, I used to think that we were based on Christian principle and not necessarily a Christian nation, but again, then after I started taking notes after doing all my studies and I hear the way these men talk, or the way they spoke, and the way they wrote, I believe that they were firmly Christian, and Tom Jefferson was a anti-clerical, you know, he couldn't stand the clergy, very much a Christian. Anyway, I just wanted to bring that up.
Okay, I'm going to address the second part and then go back to the first part. In the second part, in that passage that you just read, at no time did any of that allude to Christianity in any way, shape, or form. I have never denied, nor had our founding fathers, and it would be silly to do so, that they like the term divine providence. I like source. Some people like God. Some people like creator. Whatever. There was quote divine intervention, and for the sake of this conversation, I'll just use that term. Absolutely. I mean, we have a perfect example. The best example, from my perspective, was the War of 1812, when Washington was burning down, and a horrific thunderstorm came through, and a torrential downpour put out the fires in Washington, D.C., but more specifically, a tornado, which is not known in Washington, D.C., raked the British troops and sent them packing. Now, if that ain't divine intervention, I don't know what it is. That's my favorite divine intervention story in the history of our country. But my point, and I rest with that, is that there's nothing in there that alludes to a Christian form of belief in anything that you wrote. Now, here comes the tricky part. Now, we're going to go back to the first part. The problem that we often have, myself included, is in cherry picking. And in cherry picking on the first part of your statement, you allude to the Bible. Now, the problem is, do you know the true history, and how far back do you go? Where do you start your cherry picking? And it is my understanding that the original stories that came from the Lemurians and the Atlanteans, the pre-antediluvian peoples, are the ancient stories, the true stories that were the initial base elements of the Bible. And of course, the Bible is a book written by men, men who had agendas, and so these true stories over time got changed slowly but surely, and then you got into the Council of Nicaea and Constantine, and they voted over politically which books were politically acceptable for the Bible or not, again doing an agenda. But my point to you is that the Bible is a law book. I think we can both agree on that. But these tenets, and in the base of the Bible, is the true cosmic rules: service to others or service to self. That's the basics. And these old ancient stories that were used as the basis for the Bible got changed. I'll be polite. Got changed over time. And then, of course, the current King James Version came out in the manner that I described. So your argument in that regard is really a matter of where you choose to go back in time to choose your perspective. And I submit that if you go all the way back to the ancient times, the antediluvian times, you get right back to what we all consider to be are the golden rules, and service to others, and treat others like we would, don't steal, and all that basic stuff that we understand as unalienable rights. And that was my point, and I yield.
Okay, and I am going to pick up on that, on what Eric was saying. That was Eric, correct?
Correct.
Yes, I'm going to pick up what you were saying, because you were talking about Babel and how, what did you say about Babel? Because in prophecy it says, come out of her, my people, correct? Babel? And you had mentioned Babel in what you were talking about.
That was part of Franklin's quote before the...
Yes. Yes. Oh, yes. Thank you. Thank you. You were breaking up around that time, and I thought, whoa, you know, I like what he's saying. Because,
I know, I didn't hear that. I was listening to her, and I didn't get it.
Well, the thing is that back in Genesis 11:3, I mean, here's the key. We're told to come out of Babel, all right, in Scripture, and in Revelation, actually. And then going back to Genesis 11:3, it shows how what they did was totally according to Scripture. Everything that has been done since the 1776 has been according to Scripture. They use Scripture against us, because the thing is that in order for a preacher to preach, he has certain rules he had to follow in order to become a 501c3 corporation, correct? So who is the God of that is truly the God of a lot of these larger congregations that are 501c3s? It's Mammon. So everything they say, when they said, in God we trust, and you know, one nation under God, which God? I have to question. Because in Genesis 11:3, it says, with the creation of Babel, the land of Shinar, Shinar is the ancient word for Babel, or the ancient place of Babel. And 11:3 says, and this is the King James Version, and it hits it right on spot, because Eric, what are we? Aren't we supposed to be lively stones that are fitly joined together, according to Scripture?
Yeah. Okay. Sure.
You know the Scripture I'm talking about, correct?
I mean, I can't tell you chapter and verse.
I can't either. That's, but you've heard that before, right?
Okay. Yeah. Let's go with it.
Okay, and okay, so 11:3 says, Genesis 11:3 said to they said to one another. Now this is Nimrod and his deal, from what I understand. Says, go to, let us make brick and burn them thoroughly. And they had brick for stone. Okay, lively stones is what it says in the New Testament. And slime they had for mortar. What do we call lawyers? Esquires for the nobility. Huh?
Yeah.
What do we call them? You see, I mean, right there, Genesis 11:3. And they said to one another, let us go and make brick and burn them thoroughly, the counterfeit stone. And they had brick for stone and slime they had for mortar. I like the way the King James put slime in there, but everything they've done, they have done according to the Constitution, everything, including the definition of the word state as it was used in the 18th century. States meant nobility in the 1785 and 1830 dictionaries, English of the English language, states, S-T-A-T-E-S, meant nobility. And with that, I yield. Unless you have a question.
I'll yield with this by saying that Jefferson and Franklin, their parents were Puritans, and they got their education from their parents. I mean, that's where it began. Anyway, I can make a strong argument for being Christian. It's a Christian God, and I agree that what Captain John is saying, nowhere in there does it say Christianity. However, the foundation is entirely Christian. But, yeah. Anyway, I appreciate your time and your thought.
Well, let me add that, okay, for, saying it's a Christian nation. Well, It's a little bit more than that, because it says through the seed of Abraham all nations shall be blessed. Not all of Abraham's seed are Christian, but it's in their DNA to do the right thing. The laws are written in their heart. According to Deuteronomy, it will be forever in the generations. And it was reemphasized in the book of Acts. Does that help?
Okay, this has been a very interesting discussion, because we've kept religion out of it, and we've gone with history and facts, and that's a good thing. But I'm thinking at this point we're in a danger of wading off into religion and dogma, and so I'm going to ask that we put this particular subject to rest for the moment and move on to anyone else who wishes to speak. Next.
Yeah, I agree with that, John.
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, John, I do agree with you 100%. You cannot separate the two, what you mentioned, and I'll yield with that.
Hey, Nikki, in my pocket constitution, Amendment 2, to the being necessary to the security of a free state is capital S. Have you noticed that?
I got to tell you, I got some pretty bogus pocket constitutions and some pretty good ones. So you got to be careful which pocket constitution you're waving around. Because one I got is pretty bad. I'm like, holy crap, I don't ever want to pull that one out in a public meeting.
maybe everything is just a misspelling. It's
No, excuse me. What did you say? I didn't catch your words. I was unmuting at the time, and the noise cut in. So, and
a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free capital S state, the right of people to keep and bear arms. So are they saying being necessary to the security of a free nobility?
Yeah, it looks that way to me. We'll have to go back to the original handwritten document. And if you have it in front of you, go back and let's see what it really said. Because if it had the S, that shows that, yes, they're doing everything by the constitutions that they transcribed to meet what it is that they were trying to do, it looks like.
Well, the criminals are doing their best to make everything look good, but it's not all good. So.
Well, but they're using the correct words that is showing on these documents that they're presenting to the people as truth. So, for us to really get at the root of the problem, we have to go back and define them the way they were meant to be defined by the good people who were in those meetings back then, those assemblies, especially in Philadelphia, and that gets back to scripture, 2,000 years ago, what is it, Revelation 3 mentions Philadelphia, don't let any man take your crown. What are we talking about now? We're talking about our sovereignty. I mean, how if there's, never mind, I'm just going on a tangent.
Deep breath, honey, deep breath.
I mean, it's really relevant, though. How in the world, over 2,000 years ago, Philadelphia is mentioned as where the assembly would take place that, gives us everything we need for liberty and freedom and everything else, the tools of the trade, so to speak. And, and says, let no one take your crown. A crown meaning the sovereignty. It just is incredible to me. And then slime for mortar. I'm sorry about it. I go to scripture because scripture is really relevant for today. And even the Article 6, all the engagements and contracts and the debts entered into before that, anybody who's of the seed of Abraham, whose ancestors came out of Egypt, slavery, and stood before that mountain and said, yes, we will obey the Ten Commandments, they covet, they lie, they steal, this is a no-brainer.
Yeah. So do we have
the contract is right there. Wait, one more thing. Their contract is right there in Deuteronomy 28, the blessings and the cursings for keeping those commandments. And we're not holding them responsible to them. And that's what I have to say anyway on the subject.
Yeah.
Does that help? Thank you, the person who asked the question, or not asked the question, brought that to the attention.
Okay, so
thank you for bringing that to my attention, by the way. I'm sorry, John. I didn't mean to talk over you. I'm mute.
Do we have any additional questions on this or any of the other amendments or any of my commentary?
Yes, I do. I am Valdi from Florida.
Yeah, hey, how you doing? It's been what, almost 24 hours since we last spoke.
I read this article by Andrew P. Napolitano. This is the judge from the Fox Business News. Are you familiar with him?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he wrote today the article, and the title of the article is Did Donald Trump Change His Mind on Domestic Spying? Have you read it?
No.
And that's applied to the Amendment 4. According to Devin Nunes, chairman of House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, Republicans want now bulk surveillance. In other words, they think they do not want to go to the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court judge and ask for a warrant. They won't go just directly make the statute and get away with the judges. And seems to me like Trump is leaning toward that.
Well, I'll tell you what I heard on Alex Jones about that, and that was yesterday. And you're absolutely right there in Florida to bring this up. This is the 9/11 event. This is the 9/11 event. This is what Bush and company did. Supposedly they needed to put up surveillance to look for the bad guys and instead used it to look at all of us and also to look at Trump's in his campaign, to look at his what's going on in his inner circle. And, yeah, it's a violation of the Fourth all over the place. And Trump actually responded yesterday to Napolitano talking about that and says, you know, I believe Napolitano is right. And then Trump got a phone call from Paul Ryan, and Trump came out and says, well, I've changed my mind about Napolitano and can't do anything about it. My hands are tied. And that's quoting from the Alex Jones show.
Well, here's something that I want to bring out in a more general sense, because you guys are getting sucked in something that you may not even be aware of. First of all, I would like for you to consider that the greatest sting in history is unfolding. It has been unfolding. It started the day Trump fired Comey and told Kissinger to go screw himself. And the entire plan through this greatest sting in history is unfolding in your faces.
And there's a story behind the story behind the story.
That's where I'm going.
I was just commenting. I was just commenting what I heard. I wasn't saying right or wrong.
And there's a rule that you can always apply, that if this is a story that was covered in the mainstream media and this is what was said, that it sure as hell ain't what's going on.
Well,
and so I'm
going
to ask everybody to look for the story. Behind the story, behind the story. As you know, as it was quoted and the points that were made, I understand that. But I will guarantee you with 100% certainty, I'll bet you $1,000 freaking dollars right now in silver, that ain't what's going on. That is what I'm asking all our callers to think about. And with that, I yield.
All right. $1,000?
In silver. And I'll take your money. And I will come and get it.
Yeah, because somebody's pointed out recently that President Trump, when he was on the campaign trail, and there's even a video up about it, which is just kind of hysterical, but where he said, I will never tell what I'm going to be doing, you know, to the bad guys, which was his reference. And then the video, if you guys can find it, I mean, it's got like 20 million hits on it, but he's talking about that Obama's administration announced, I'm just going to make this up because I can't remember, but announced that they were going into Afghanistan on such and such a day to do such and such a thing, and President Trump, or the candidate President Trump, was up there, and he goes, and then they did it. And he said, I can't believe they announced what they were going to do. So John, yes. You know, I'm really tracking with what you just said. But I wanted to just go back to, just real quickly, the brilliance of our founding fathers. Because if we go back far enough, which is to me the Declaration, which is where we need to be anyway, you know, after we finish with what we're doing, if we can do that, is that our founding fathers said, the laws of nature and of nature's God, because, and see, this is something I've been studying personally, is that, I mean, for me, and I want to share it at some point with an article that I'm writing, but that precluded anybody ever saying that they could argue about which God was over this nation, because our founding fathers said it's the God of creation. And, you know, everybody's in that jurisdiction. If you're Muslim, if you're Christian, Jewish, if you're Catholic, if you're Mormon, I mean, I can't remember all the religions that are different, Buddhas, everybody and everything is under the laws of nature and of nature's God. And I just, you know, the more I study the Declaration, the more I see I love the hearts of our fathers. the founders of this nation. They knew the God of creation. And as far as these people that have gone into the Constitution and our other, you know, any other document and have capitalized the S and it means royalty to them and they don't tell anybody and blah, 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 all that stuff that they've done, you know, to trick and the trickery and the slime and the foolishness and turning us from lively stones, I get that, Nikki, turning us from lively stones into bricks. You know, all that stuff is according to what they said. And we do not ever have to take what somebody said. They're dealing, as John DeRash has said, and everybody else, you know, in L.A., has said, they're dealing in fiction. They're dealing in corporations. They're dealing in dead people. They're dealing in captures on the high seas. They're dealing in all this stuff that has absolutely no, well, I'm going to say jurisdiction over us. And, you know, when we stand up, and or not even, we don't even have to get up. When we just sit here and know that that's their jurisdiction, really and truly, that's their craziness. That's their insanity, because that doesn't apply to us. And just because they think they've captured us and chained us down with paperwork that's as long as a trail around the earth, that does not mean that we ever have to give in to that. And, of course, we're going to be tortured or beaten or captured or this. You know, there's going to be a certain amount of us that have things happen to us. But this is where, you know, according to our own faith or not faith, you know, is to where somebody's watching that. You know, we didn't get here by ourselves. When we got here, when we were born, everything was here. And I'm going to wind this down because this is like a plate of spaghetti to me. Everything touches everything else. But when we got here, everything we needed was here already provided for us. Fresh water, fruits, grain, vegetables, animals that give milk, honey, everything. We had things to make our houses with. We had fresh air to breathe and blue skies. We had beauty. We had ways to make music. And everything, we did nothing except just pop in, you know. And for anybody to be gathering all that up and hoarding it and saying that they've captured it all, they've beaten us to death, literally a lot of times they've captured us, they put us in the bottom of ships, they've done this, that, and the other. You know what? They're committing crimes, and they know it because they know what I just said, and they know that that's the truth, not because I said it, but just because it's the truth. They know what they're doing, and, you know, it's just as the power of the people, the men and women, I don't know how to express this. We don't need to be drug into any kind of violence aside from, you know, what might be happening with our defense system, the Navy. I understand that there's things going on now that we haven't discussed tonight, or at least I missed it. But that we really, our power lies in the same place that our founding fathers' power lied, and that is knowing who we are. We are not a fiction. We can't be drugged into what they say. And it just kind of aggravates me, you know, that they've done that and started that from the time that we were, before we were born. You know, I drug out my own birth certificate to check it. And yes, in Beedy-Doo, they have my mother down as an informant. And they also have her listed on my birth certificate as an unwed mother. And all this stuff, you know, we're going to have to just be, it's just aggravating to the soul, but we're going to have to just plant our feet on this terra firma, and we're going to have to say what is and what isn't, and we're going to beat them back. Here's how we're going to beat them back, is with a little fighting, I guess. You know, they'll have to attack us and stuff. But we are going to beat them backwards with our knowledge of who we are and the words that we stand there and speak, because when we start speaking, we are speaking truth to their life. we're not, people say we're speaking truth to power. No, we're not. We're speaking truth to lies, and truth always overcomes lies. And there's one more thing I want to say before I yield, is that when I was starting to explore all this several years ago, I was asking, I mean, I feel like there's a God, so that's my frame of reference. And I was asking God to show me the truth, show me truth. And one of the first things that he showed me, which I'd heard this a long time ago, and you guys have probably all heard it too, but he brought it to my memory, is that if you take all the darkness in the world and light a candle, it cannot put out the light of one single candle. And he was, you know, my God was showing me that that is the same way that the world started, that it was dark and light came into the world through his word. And I'm not even trying to go to the Bible. I'm just saying that light came from somewhere. And yes, we know everything around us is dark without the light. Light came from somewhere, and there isn't enough darkness that will ever extinguish the light of a single candle. And when we keep that in the, you know, I mean, if it fits with where people are, but if it fits, and keep that in our mind, that when we're standing up and speaking nonviolently in peace with love in our heart, with wanting to get things straightened out, with love for every person, man, woman, and child, whether they're from another nation or whether they're here in our nation or whether they think the way we do or whether they don't, as long as they're not hurting other people, that when we stand up and speak, I am just saying this, I feel like this is the truth, and then I yield, is that when we speak the words that we're, that our founding fathers knew and that we're learning, you know, some of the stuff that we're learning here, when we start speaking, I know, because I've done it, that people who even thought they were against us, all of a sudden you can see their face change, you can see their eye change, you can feel them in their soul, in their spirit as a man or a woman, you can feel them connect with us, and it's just almost like that they're sucking the energy out of us, because the people are so hungry for what we have learned and what we know, that when we go out there and start speaking, we will be surprised at who joins up with us. And thank you for letting me go on and on about that. I really wanted to say all that, and I yield now. Thank you.
Well, you're most
welcome. I have two things to add,
let me get into this here, because it's very important, because she just did something really wonderful, and it is likely that many of you missed it. And now I'm going to ask for a moment that you put some very sophisticated thinking caps on to listen to what I have to say, because she touched on all of it. And here is the story behind the story behind the story. We know about the milk and honey of how the Articles of Confederation started this wonderful republic with the Revolution, and then we had this wonderful Constitution, this wonderful Bill of Rights, and it was all milk and honey. And now we have also exposed the story behind the story, where there's some subterfuge and things aren't exactly as they appear, and things don't apply where we think they apply. And now we start to have bad feelings towards the founding fathers, that they were all corrupt and that they were sucked in by the Rothschilds and they were working for evil. And then, as was just brought out a moment ago, no, our founding fathers were of good heart. And the story behind the story behind the story is what you just heard said, that underneath all of this, and this is what Franklin meant when he said it's a republic if you can keep it, is what you just heard this lady say, is that written into all of this was, you know, if, for lack of a better term, a remedy, if you can keep it. That behind all of this, we would come out and understand that we are the power. We are the truth. We are the light. And the lies cannot stand up to us, and the darkness cannot stand up to us. And that is the story behind the story behind the story of everything that we're dealing with. And she did a wonderful job of bringing that out in very simplistic terms. And with that, I yield.
And I would like to bring forth the formula for achieving it, okay? It is as simple as Einstein's theory of relativity, because it's all relevant. Energy or Elohim, Elohim is the word for God in the Hebrew language. So either energy or Elohim equals MC squared, matter meaning us, mankind, times the velocity of light. He emptied himself in a vacuum, okay? Light. We are the light of the world. That's all in, John, the first chapter of the book of John. So E, Elohim, or energy, however you want to interpret that, equals mankind times the velocity of light in a vacuum, emptied of pride, vanity, greed, you name it. All of the fruits of the spirit that are contrary to what was just told to us. And I have another thing to add, okay? As everyone was talking, I was looking for whether the Second Amendment has capital S in all the documents, in the older documents, and I'm seeing the capital S in the older documents, and it's actually on Yale's Avalon Project as a capital S for state, the security of a free state. And that also would tie in also with the 10th Amendment, by the way. But in Cornell Law School, it is a well-regulated militia being necessary for the security of a free state, small s. That's the people. And the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. So I would recommend that you cite Cornell Law. And, if you're using the Second Amendment for any kind of paperwork. Okay? And with that, I yield. I love Einstein's theory of relativity. It sums it all up, doesn't it? John?
I read it in grammar school. But I'm kind of a crazy guy. Hard part here, but I was also into the big books.
The velocity of light in a vacuum. He emptied himself. He became like pure mankind, and he didn't contract with the devil.
All right, well, we're getting close on time, so are there any other additional questions? We've got a few minutes yet. We're not pressed yet, but...
Or comments.
Mm-hmm. Questions or comments?
Just to make the point, for it's going to include Islam with Judaism and Christianity, remember that your lawmaker is your God, and as I understand it, the Muslim God is the God of the moon, which is, by our standards, a pagan God. So you'd have two different lawmakers there, so we will have a conflict in the law that is written, the law that is followed. But I just want to make that point. But my question for Captain John is, what's your intel tell you about the way this unseen war is going? And what do you think about Hawaii and Japan? Do you think that was a real? Do you think that was a real threat that was somehow avoided? Do you think it was actually a mistake? And where are we on this war that we can't see and feel so much?
I'm going to be able to answer your question halfway. I can tell you what I know, and I can't tell you why I know it in an NLA call. Okay? It is my I have said many times in public, in writing, however not in the NLA vein, that all nuclear weapons were off the table many years ago. And anybody that thinks there's going to be a nuclear bomb is grossly misinformed and is pushing fear porn. There is no chance of any nuclear weapon being exploded on the surface of the Earth going back 4 years. Period. End of story. No discussion. Punto. Okay? So that being said, and I made no bones about that, I've been public on this for 4 years when I was informed of this. So to answer your question, I can't prove any of this. I can just give you the rumors within my intel circles. None of this is confirmed at this stage. I haven't had a chance to chase it down because I've been busy. But, yes, it was, in fact, a real attack. It came off a submarine. Some of the rumors were that it was a Chinese sub. But, of course, when I see something like this happen, I always, always, always point at the Khazarian Mafia. So far, I'm batting 990 on that. And so it wouldn't surprise me at all that the Khazarian Mafia controlled a rogue bunch of Chinese that were in the faction that was not so fond of Trump. I mean, that could all have played out. That's all supposition. But it was submarine launched, and it was taken out right after it was launched. So there's my answer to your question.
Okay. As far as your positivity, your belief, your good feelings about the way this is going, I mean, I think you said before that it's pretty much a done deal. What do you think about that and timing? I know you can't do timing. We can't do timing, but what are you looking at here as far as that goes?
Well, I will tell you it's a done deal. I will tell you, no matter which way you look at it, the war is over. We won, period. End of story. You're just seeing the rest of it being played out. The greatest thing in history is rolling on. Nothing can stop it. We're in good stead. And I understand from the mass's perspective, everybody wants to see an arrest. Everybody wants to see Hillary behind bars. I will tell you, when that actually comes to fruition, it's all over. It's done. It's finished. It's wrapped up. There isn't anything left. They turned out the lights, they took the flag, and they went home. So those of you that are looking with excitement towards arrest are not that important. All of the groundwork that's been leading up to this since 1953 is important. And we're done. It's just really the way it was explained to me as it unfolds in 2018, it's a death by a thousand cuts. And the White Hats are going to keep nibbling away at bringing down the cabal, you know, in little pieces. And the reason for that is Sun Tzu, The Art of War, because 97% of the people of this country and of the planet are frickin' clueless. And no matter how you do this and how easily you try to make it and how slow you draw it out, they're still going to freak the hell out. That's why I own guns, because it's going to be your family members. It's going to be your neighbors. It's going to be your church members. It's going to be your neighborhood people. It's going to be your town and county people that are going to freak out. And there's going to be disruptions. I've talked about this in great detail. I don't know what's going to happen, but I think it's reasonable to say gas stations are going to be out of gas for a while. Food stores are going to be out of food for a while. Banks are going to be out of cash for a while. And you know how people are when they go 3 hours without cable frickin' TV. Try 2 weeks without gas or food or cash. So we know this is going to be an issue. That's why they're drawing it out with this death of a thousand cuts. They're trying to keep the disruption level to a minimum. Now, I know everybody would say, they could go out and arrest every damn body tomorrow. But that would cause some issues that I would care not to get into for security reasons. And you don't want them to do that. What I will tell you is that back on this July 4th of 2012 was the day the plan was supposed to be executed in the mass arrests. And the military was 98% ready to roll, except they didn't know about some weapons that you wouldn't believe even if I tried to tell you. And we would have lost about roughly 80% of the population and probably about 25 major cities. And that was ruled unacceptable. But they could have done that. They could have gone out and arrested every damn body right then and there, as they were supposed to. So the point of all of this is there are reasons. Story behind the story behind the story, there are reasons. But I'm telling you, It's over. It's done. It's finished. It's strictly a mop-up operation now. The mouse is taking the cheese. It's in the trap. So all of that stuff that the masses that don't understand the complexity of this situation, that are just solely sitting on their butts waiting for arrest, you know, it'll happen. And it'll happen when it'll happen, but it's really not relevant anymore. It isn't. It really isn't. Yeah, make you happy. Yeah, you can wave a flag and shoot out some fireworks and smoke a cigar, but it's irrelevant. The game is over. We won. And that's why how I answer your question.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate it. Say, do you think, you know, we talked about this 10 years of work we got to do. It's kind of just to get everything back in shape, which is what we at the NLA are, I guess we're going to be the ground troops. Does that happen after the 2 weeks or a month?
It's been happening since the day this organization started. And I venture to guess it's going to run for another decade. We are an educational assembly. We have a human species on a prison planet that has been hornswoggled for thousands of years. Now, you tell me how long you think it's going to take to re-educate our species. And then you'll have a time element.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, I'd feel a lot better if we could get, seriously, I know everyone has a different threshold for whatever, this and that, but if we could just get our hands on the actual educational system, I myself would feel a whole lot better. Hey, that reminds me, you said in 1885 there's actually a document on the books that says they changed the national education to national indoctrination. Do you know where
yes.
I can find that?
It's quoted in Charlotte Israelbit's book, The Deliberate Dumbing Down of America, and that's available free in PDF on the Internet.
The Deliberate Dumbing Down of America.
It's a classic. I have said for years that if you are a parent of a school-aged child and you haven't read this book, you should hit each other in the shins with a baseball bat, and I mean that literally.
What's the woman's name? Charlotte what again?
Izerbyt. Izerbyt, I think.
I thought it was IS. Isn't
it might be. I don't know.
ISBERT, I believe.
Yeah. That's the beauty of Google. If you're close, it'll find it.
I'm not looking it up. I just, you know, remember reading about that, yeah.
And I'm pretty sure it's in our damn file section on our NLA Illinois Facebook page, because I've certainly posted it there before. That's right up there with Pawns in the Game. If you ever read that book, you wouldn't be asking me any of these questions. You'd already know. Cabal playbook. Nothing has changed in 300 years. Same playbook, same plays. Absolutely nothing has changed. Zero.
Read it yet. Okay. All right. Thank you.
But yeah, there's a Deliberate Dumbing Down of America by Charlotte Izerbyt, and in there she has the specifics on, I know it was a congressional record, and I know it was 1885. That's all I can help you with at the moment.
Super. Thank you.
But that's real. That's real.
Okay.
It's about that time.
Well,
okay.
let me put one more thing out there, because the fellow who had mentioned about the capital S, all right, I have two books here. One book is from 1853, and it's called The American's Own Book, and it says Article 2. Obviously, it's Amendment 2. A well-regulated militia being necessary for the security of a free state, small s. And then, and this book, incidentally, also has the original 13th Amendment in it. And the 1868 book, The Voter's Textbook, is the name of that book, has the capitalized S in Article 2, and It has the 13th Amendment, you know, there shall be no involuntary servitude, but it doesn't say that it ever was ratified, and this is in 1868 this book was printed. So I'll go ahead and post the link to this because it's the actual books that are, or the pages of the books that are on there, okay?
Hey, quickly, really quickly, Robert, I'm glad you said posting links. I went and chased down our most recent version of our Committee of Safety video on YouTube, and I posted that link in the comments forum under the COS tab on our NLA website, and I put it on all our NLA Facebook pages. So if you want to see that video, I did post that, and it is available. And with that, I'm gone.
All righty. Well, we've got new videos coming out, but they're not done yet. All right. Thank you, guys.